It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome into a Friday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. I am Ashley Bastock, joined here with Mary Kay Cabot once again, our final Dan-less podcast. Dan, we miss you so much. We're so ready for you to come back. But Mary Kay, at least we have a bit of news this Friday to talk. We're going to probably go a little bit shorter today, but we want to start off with the Browns release their offseason schedule. Of course, the offseason program schedules went out across the NFL today. So really quickly, just going to rattle off some dates. They're in Mary Kay's story that she has over at cleveland.com/Browns, but April 16th is when the offseason program begins. We'll get Andrew Berry before the draft a couple days later on April 18th. Then, of course, we have the draft, which is the 25th through the 27th this year. The Browns will hold their rookie minicamp 2 days later, May 10th through the 12th. And then we're going to get into OTAs that month as well. So we'll have three open OTA sessions, their second session on May 22nd, their fifth session on May 29th, their ninth session on June 5th, the golf tournament that we go to every year is in between those days very nicely. And then the offseason program will conclude with mandatory veteran minicamp on June 11th through 13th. So Mary Kay, those are all the bare bones days, but we were talking again, I think it's good to remind people about the phases of the NFL offseason programs and what you can and can't do at each step during these three stages.
Yes, in phase one, which again, it begins on April 15th, and then the Browns are going to be available to us on April 16th. But that first phase is 2 weeks of mostly conditioning, and coaches really are not working with the players yet, but they do have meetings. So there are meetings and then conditioning with the conditioning staff. So that lasts for 2 weeks. It'll be interesting to see if Deshaun shows up for that first 2 weeks. Now, from a camaraderie standpoint and from a being with his teammates standpoint and just being around and getting everybody excited and showing the commitment of being here for this voluntary program all the way up until you get to the mandatory mini camp, it's probably good for Deshaun to be here. But we'll see how that goes because we know that he's working very closely with his surgeon out in Los Angeles, Dr. Neil Elitrosh, world-renowned shoulder surgeon. So we'll see if he's there for that. But then once you start to get into the on-field work, he's expected to be throwing with his teammates and to his teammates. So phase two is 3 weeks of on-field work. Now the coaches get involved with the players. So that will start in early May. And again, it's 3 weeks of on-field work. It involves, you can do offense lining up across from offense. You can line up defense against defense, but you can't go 11 on 11s. You have to wait until OTAs, which come in phase three of the program. And then phase three is 4 weeks of the program, and it includes 10 OTAs, organized team activities. I always say, how do we know they're organized? We're not allowed to be in there for most of them. They could be total chaos for all we know. But it's 10 practices, and you get to do, once again, you get to do 11 on 11s, and you're installing your schemes and your systems, which is huge this year, absolutely huge, because the whole offense, in my mind, I don't know, maybe they're just tweaking it a little bit, but I think it's going to be a pretty significant overhaul.
Yeah, so really that phase three every year is, I think, the most important part. Like Mary Kay said, there's other benefits to the earlier parts of the offseason program from a camaraderie standpoint, from laying the groundwork through film and meetings, things like that. I think especially for some new guys, some veterans, especially the rookies even. Of course, when we have that rookie mini camp, those are a huge few days for them. But Mary Kay, I think it makes sense when we talk about some of the things we're looking for, some of the things we're curious about, just so people know most of that is going to be related to phase three of the offseason program. But I do think, you know, you reported in your most recent Browns Insider that it seems like right now, from what we know, since Deshaun's rehab is going well, he's going to be at all or most of this stuff, at least for the time being. And I just think he is undeniably the story of this offseason program.
He really is. And we know that he started throwing last week out at UCLA. Joe Sheehan, the Browns head trainer, went out there to supervise these throwing sessions. David Njoku was out there to catch passes and offer moral support. Quincy Avery, Deshaun's private quarterback's coach, was out there running the sessions. So he is actually throwing the football about 4 or so months after having his surgery to repair the fractured socket. So that's great news. That is great news for the Browns, and it gives them the hope and the knowledge to be able to say he's going to be throwing in the offseason program. And that's really great, because if you're doing that, then you are one big step closer to getting on that football field and starting that game in September. So I think that is the number one thing that we are watching. But the thing to remember, Ashley, and we've written about this, we've talked about this, is the fact that they do have three other quarterbacks on the roster. And Deshaun is not going to have to carry the full workload. We're going to get to see plenty of Jameis Winston and for sure plenty of Tyler Huntley.
I think that's one of the things that I'm most curious about, because I know when we did our Browns bingo board, of course, which people may remember, it's on the Orange and Brown Talk Instagram. I believe Dan did an actual post with it. We joked about this idea of when Deshaun begins throwing in these OTAs, this over-analysis almost of how much zip, quote-unquote, he has on the ball and what the arc on his throws look like. And I do think in OTAs, that is something I think just by the nature of the position you do have to watch for, but there's also no contact, we know, right? So it's not entirely these full live speed, live game situations. But for me, I think besides the necessity of watching that, I'm most curious just to kind of watch those other guys too and see how they split up those reps. Is that something that you're also most curious about if you're ranking what you're watching in terms of the quarterback room this offseason program?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very anxious to see what Jameis Winston is all about, right? I mean, we know that he has a big, strong arm. We've seen that over the years. We know he can sling it. So we've just got done watching a bunch of Joe Flacco. So we're used to one of these big arms where you can just let it rip and let it end up, you know, 70 yards downfield in some cases. I'm anxious to see what his arm is all about. Again, he's 30 years old, so he's not still 23 or 24, but I think all the arm strength still seems to be there. And the Browns have pretty good speed. They don't have a speedster on the roster per se anymore like they did when they had Marquise Goodwin and when they had Anthony Schwartz. I still think they could use that. I still think they need that element of blazing speed. We'll see if they add it in any way, shape, or form in the draft or in free agency or elsewhere before the season begins. But I'm looking forward to seeing Jameis just sling it and see what he's got. Just looking forward to seeing his, you know, just his size, his presence, his leadership ability. You start to see how players gravitate towards other players very early on in these practices. You see who's surrounded by whom, who gravitates to who, and it's very interesting to see how that's all going to work out. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm expecting to see plenty of Jameis and Deshaun working very closely together and just having their heads, their foreheads together, you know, talking to each other a lot, going over things, learning things. And in some respects, they're both going to be learning some new terminology, and they're both going to be learning some new things schematically with this offense. So I think that'll be very interesting. And then once again, Tyler Huntley, yes, I'm very anxious to see what Tyler's about. We know that he is very much a running quarterback, and he brings that skill set to the table. And I think, you know, he's someone that you could even do some really cool things with in terms of throw him into the game, give him a package of plays and see what he can do. So I think it gives you a little bit of flexibility that way.
I'm really looking forward to potentially another offseason where we talk about a package of plays for one of the Browns' backup quarterbacks, because I think those are always fun thought experiments. But quite honestly, I'm of the mind, when it is this portion of the offseason, why not try out weird stuff like that before you have to add in all the contact and offense versus defense especially? So I do think I'm really curious about all those things as well. And I keep thinking about from the Jameis Winston perspective specifically. I remember when Joe Flacco walked into the Browns locker room in November and being shocked at how big he was. And I had never covered Joe Flacco in person in any point in the last couple of years. I mean, obviously he was in Cleveland for that Jets game a couple years ago, but didn't actually see him up close, didn't go to the Jets locker room for that game. So Jameis is a little bit smaller height-wise. Joe Flacco's 6'6", Jameis is listed as 6'4". But I'm just really curious to kind of see his build and his size and how it compares to Deshaun, because I know that's something that people talk about a lot with him. And I'm just curious to kind of see how that room is composed now, because it is very different than it was this time last year and even 2-3 months ago.
Well, the thing about Jameis, in addition to the size, and I am also curious to just see what his presence is like, right? These guys have to come in and pass the eyeball test with us. We need to see what they look like in terms of just being a football player. So that's always very interesting. But the thing with Jameis that I think it's important for people to remember is the fact that he really is more of a drop back passer. He's not the dual threat quarterback that Deshaun is. He's not the dual threat quarterback that Joshua Dobbs was here. And Jacoby Brissett wasn't either. So I think we need to make that distinction and realize that when you do go to Jameis, or if you do have to go to Jameis, it's going to be vastly different than what you're seeing with Deshaun or what you're going to be seeing potentially with a Tyler Huntley. So that's one thing to note, but I think that's good. I think it's good for the players to be able to pivot and adapt to different styles of quarterbacks and to just keep everything open, to keep all of your options open and to know that whatever happens, that you're going to be ready for that. So I think that's in part why they were ready for a Joe Flacco last year, is because they had Jacoby Brissett the year before. For the first 11 games, they were really dealing with more of a pocket style passer. So I think that's good for everybody. But those are some of the things that we're going to be watching. And then also, I know you're anxious to see some of the new guys like Jerry Jeudy. How is Jerry Jeudy fitting in? I'm sure he's going to be attached like glue to Amari Cooper's hip, right? I mean, he's just going to be little Amari. I just know that's how it's going to go, right? So yes. I'm looking forward to seeing him and how he fits into the room and how that dynamic all goes in the receiver room.
All right, let's sneak in a quick break here, actually. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about the offseason program, and we're going to start with that nice little lead-in that Mary Kay left us with, talking about the receivers and the pass game as a whole. Welcome back on this Friday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Ashley Bastock here with Mary Kay Cabot. Again, we're talking the offseason program since all of those dates were released by the NFL and their teams today. So Mary Kay said it there right before the break. I do think this is one of the other big topics of the offseason because Jerry Jeudy has been their biggest acquisition, I think, so far, their newest biggest acquisition so far. And I know he's coming to Cleveland, obviously, with a certain perception. Of course, he hasn't had a 1,000-yard season. I think people are skeptical of the extension the Browns have shelled out for him. We talked about that earlier in the week and some things Andrew Berry said about acquiring him at the NFL owners' meetings. But I am really curious. You hit the nail on the head there. To not just see what he's like out there catching passes from Deshaun Watson and Jameis Winston and even Tyler Huntley, perhaps, but to also see those interactions that we're going to get between him and Amari Cooper. And again, at this stage of the offseason, we don't have locker room access until the season. We're not fully kind of seeing these guys interact and gleaning things about their personalities. But this is really your first glimpse of that.
Absolutely. And I am really eager to see it because you have Elijah Moore. You've got a couple guys from last year that are young and trying to make sure that they stand their ground in David Bell and Cedric Tillman. Then you've got Amari, who sort of leads the show, and you've got Jerry, the new guy coming in. Interesting, because most of the time when we talked about this receiver room, it was a pretty quiet receiver room, right? Well, now you're starting to get some guys in there that are a little bit more vocal. Elijah is a little bit more vocal. Jerry Judy's going to be a little bit more vocal. But one of the things that I think will be interesting is the fact that Amari and Jerry and Elijah all hail from South Florida. So they can all finish each other's football sentences. They have similar backgrounds. They understand what it was like to grow up in that part of Florida and the competitive nature of prep football and youth football down there. They sort of have a lot of unspoken common bond going on. So I think that will be good for all of them. And then you've got the Alabama ties between Jerry and Amari. And I mean, that makes you family right there, right? I mean, you're just going to be talking about things that Nick Saban did and how he did things. And they have so much in common, those two. And I think it's really going to help Jerry Judy. I think Jerry needs a little Amari Cooper in his life. I really do. And we have seen, you wrote a whole story about it. I've been talking to guys about it. It's the minute they hit the doorstep, like Michael Woods, how they attach themselves to Amari and they just don't let go, and it really helps them. And that's what happens when you have a five-time Pro Bowler. You want to be like him. So I think that's going to be really good for them. And then yesterday I wrote about the fact that, and we talked about it a little bit, that they might end up extending Amari Cooper, which I think will be great. I think it would be great for him to go into this season and even this offseason, if they can get it done, knowing that he's also here for multiple years. So I think that will bring some new energy to the room, perhaps.
Yeah, I've said it before. I do think since you did shell out this extension for Jerry Judy, they should extend Amari now. Like, there shouldn't be a question about it in my mind, because I do think, quite honestly, a lot of Jerry's success could hinder on his burgeoning mentor-mentee relationship with Amari Cooper. And I think for fans who especially are from Northeast Ohio, if we have any listeners from South Florida, I'm sure you can attest to this. When we talk to these players, especially these receivers from South Florida, I just think there's always something different about them. I think I started to kind of put that together last year from the time Elijah Moore first got here and the way he talked about Amari. And it's just, even the way Amari had built up his reputation as a high schooler in the Miami area, that alone was, I think, super influential on a lot of these younger receivers who are from the area. And like you said, Jerry Judy has that added Alabama connection. I know when I've talked to Elijah Moore, he talked about, oh yeah, I would pull up YouTube clips of Amari at Alabama before my 7-on-7s in high school and try to mimic his routes. These guys, I think it's just a very different understanding. And I'm sure that exists with players from other parts of the country who find themselves, you know, mixed together. And there's maybe a certain institutional knowledge. But I think the South Florida connection with receivers is really important. And from a skill set standpoint, you talk to those guys, they talk about every receiver from South Florida is fast. And what they think differentiates themselves is the route running.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, Jerry Judy is basically known also for his route running. And you know that he's been watching film of Amari Cooper for many, many years. So if it seems like they have some crossover and some similarities, it's probably because he has assimilated so much of Amari Cooper's game into his own. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I've already watched some of it on film, but I can't wait to see it in person. And he really can separate. He can do that. But just like Amari can, I'm sure he can also make the contested catch. He hasn't done it as much as he will here, or as much as he thinks he can, but that's largely because he's gotten open so much and really hasn't had to make as many contested catches. So looking forward to see how that goes. And then also just the dynamic. I mean, what does this do for Elijah? What does this mean for Elijah, knowing that Jerry Judy is coming in here as the number two receiver? When you're paying someone $16.25 million per year, that's what the average is over the 4 years of his contract. And that's how I'm sure the Browns are looking at it. And that's how I think you need to look at this contract. You can't really just separate it out and say, oh, well, there's this 1 year for this, and then there's this 3 years for this. It's basically a four-year deal worth $16.25 million. That's my story, Ashley, and I'm sticking with it.
I trust your memory for numbers. I would bet a lot on your memory for numbers at this point. I've seen it firsthand. Even when you're not sure about something, you're usually right.
Yeah, that's so weird. I never realized that I had that until you guys pointed it out to me. So now I'm just embracing it. I'm like, oh, I guess I have a mind for, or a memory for numbers, not necessarily being able to compute the numbers per se. No. I don't know if I could sit down and knock out a bunch of calculus, but I do remember a lot of numbers. But anyways, I think that's going to be interesting to see how Elijah kind of maybe takes it up another notch this offseason. Now he's got somebody in front of him as the number two receiver, and he's going to have to fight and scrap and claw for any non-11 personnel reps. 11 personnel being three wides. Whenever they're not in three wides, I mean, there are going to be times where it's Amari and Jerry. But if you play your cards right and show that you deserve to be out there, then sometimes in two wides, it's going to be Amari and Elijah. But he's going to have to work to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, I'm also curious with Elijah. And I think last year, we never saw him get outwardly frustrated. I think there was this narrative about him coming out of the Jets, and Mary Kay, you wrote a whole big story basically debunking the reasons he left and maybe what his attitude was like at the end and trying to set the record straight there. But I am just curious how he is going to be this year with that. Are we going to get kind of that same calmness to him? Because I felt like he would talk about being frustrated, but again, we never saw it. He never became a problem. I remember writing a story about midway through the season, and he's saying, like, I know what my numbers are, because a reporter was trying to ask something along those lines, and he's like, well, I know it better than anybody, trust me. So I thought you saw glimpses of it, but it never boiled over. And I'm wondering, again, is that something where he got an unfair rep throughout the early years of his career, the really early years, and how is he going to handle that mounting pressure? Because I do think he comes into this year with something to prove. And obviously, as long as he has Deshaun Watson throwing him the football the entire time, that is the guy they thought was going to mesh really well with Deshaun.
Yeah, you know what? I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they have developed a culture here that is so team-oriented that there really is no room for that kind of huffing and puffing around. And if you're going to be that guy, then you're probably not going to be here very long. This is a team concept culture. And I think these guys know that. I think that Jerry Jeudy is going to find out very, very quickly that your body language is going to have to be good when you're on the field. Even if you think you're open and you didn't get the ball, you do not want to be expressing that with your shoulders and your hands and anything else that you can come up with. So I think this is a place where, again, the team concept is so highly valued that most of these guys learn right away that that's not how they roll here, to show that you're frustrated or you wish you were getting the ball more or any of those kinds of things.
So one of the other things I've been thinking about with the offense in these OTA sessions that I'm especially curious about, I was thinking back to last year and how we watched Jim Schwartz and things we learned about Jim Schwartz at that time. For example, learning he would just sit himself right in the middle of a drill to talk to guys, and he wasn't afraid to be a little fiery, and he showed up wearing a Jordan Kanasic jersey one day, and Kevin said, oh, this is something he likes to do, and then we never saw him do it again. Maybe he did, but you get little colorful tidbits like that, and we got it with Bubba Ventrone too. I'm curious, what do you think we're going to get out of Ken Dorsey and watching him in these sessions? Because I'm really curious. I mean, I haven't covered Ken Dorsey before, but it is my first time going to OTAs with a different OC at the helm here.
I think he's probably going to be pretty animated and pretty fiery. I mean, we've seen things like that from him. We know that he is crazy competitive, and I think that will show. And I think he also knows that they have a very small, compressed time frame in which to implement the new scheme and the new terminology and get the new staff acclimated and the new players acclimated. So I think there's going to be a sense of intensity, a sense of urgency on his part. And I think we're going to see him really dive right in and be very vocal and take over. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be calling plays yet. We couldn't, of course, get that out of Kevin again yet. But I think he's going to show his leadership skills right from the jump.
Yeah, we keep hearing references to these, I guess, Ken Dorsey has some legendary pickup basketball stories and things like that. So I'm curious if they have that basketball hoop out again, which I'm sure they will. They'll trot that over to the practice field. I'm curious if we're going to see Ken pick up a ball, too, in terms of that stuff. But Mary Kay, I think it makes sense to leave it here. We talked about the offense. I think the passing game and the quarterbacks is the biggest part of this offseason program. But not to lock us into a pod idea for Monday or next week. But maybe if you're listening, Dan, I think maybe it would make sense to talk about some defensive things we're watching, maybe even some special teams. We could get into that next week. But I do think the quarterbacks here are probably the most important part, right? I'm not wrong in saying that. And I'm asking that because I have a newsletter coming out basically about that on Saturday morning, too.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that, that is the biggest takeaway or the biggest storyline heading into the offseason program is the quarterback room. So I think we all can't wait for that, and it will be here before we know it.
All right, so you can check out all of our coverage over at cleveland.com/Browns. Check out our YouTube channel, that's Cleveland Browns over at cleveland.com. And while you're on our site, forgot to mention, become a Football Insider subscriber. Again, you'll get texts from us. You'll get a newsletter from us every morning in your inbox. And finally, check out that Instagram that I mentioned earlier in the podcast, that's Orange and Brown Talk over there. So, all right, Mary Kay, Dan will be back on Monday. This has been so much fun, but we'll talk. We'll regroup over the weekend.
Well, like I said, you've done a great job of hosting, and you've certainly done a tremendous job of producing and uploading, which is so much harder than anybody really realizes. And so thank you for doing that all week, because I know it's very, very how long does it take you to produce a podcast?
Yeah, and I don't want to speak for Dan specifically, because I'm sure Dan has this down to a science now. But I think for me, from the time we start recording until I tweet the podcast link out, it's typically about 3.5 or 4 hours. I mean, it's a while. And today's the shortest podcast we've done this week. We're at 27 minutes right now. Might get a little cut down in editing, but yeah, it takes a while. It's hard. When Dan first gave us this tutorial last year, Mary Kay and I were like, what? What does any of this mean? It was like Dan was speaking a different language. It was like he was bilingual and we had no idea until he sat down and gave us this tutorial.
Well, I give you a lot of credit for actually going through with it and producing the pods, because I have not done one of those myself yet. One of these days I have to break down and actually do that. But thank you so much for doing that all week. I know it's been very time consuming. When I was down in Orlando at the owners' meetings, you were just handling it and doing it. And you did a great job of hosting. I really, really appreciate that. And yes, we definitely missed you, Dan, but Ashley, you represented well.
Yay. All right, Mary Kay, I will talk to you on Monday once Dan is back.
Sounds good.